Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. And this is your show host, Randy Fine. Today is Free Advice Friday, the day that I take your calls and answer your questions. The number to call if you'd like to call in is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. So today I'm going to start with a letter that I received. This letter has a lot of good questions in it, which will allow me to answer a lot of questions that many of you have on your mind. So I'm going to read it. After 9 years of celibacy, I attracted another narcopath. Although I was very educated on personality disorders, I thought I was aware and strong enough to handle this relationship. I take responsibility for being lonely and needing to feel loved. I also take responsibility for wanting a very sick person to experience the kindness, care, and nurturing, maternal love so many abuse survivors seek. Of course, the narcopath misrepresented himself and lied about how serious his mental health issues were. The new trick seems to be the hipster-looking artist and yoga enthusiast that is really a manipulative hobo with a guitar. The spiritualized narcissist that is aware of his disorder and relationship issues but seeks understanding, support, and help. Using all the language of the narcissistic abuse survivor, however, the narcopath plays both victim and predator, rapidly cycling between personas, false identities, and false realities, lies, never really wanting to do any serious work on themselves or heal. I understand that life is for our progress and that the narcopath misses out on these spiritual growth opportunities, but how do you deal with being alone and single while these people enjoy their lives? I am 44 with no children, close friends, or family, due to a very abusive, narcissistic mother and abusive relationships. Can you please detail how to form healthy relationships and boundaries as an empath? How to work in healing service, caregiving, nursing, or counseling, doing work with pathological personalities without becoming enmeshed or targeted for exploitation as an NPD abuse survivor? We all need love and support, and sometimes it is easier to accept the narcissism in our lives than to be feeling left alone, abused, and abandoned. So there's a lot in this letter that I can speak to. First of all, as far as being able or strong enough to handle a relationship with someone with a personality disorder, especially NPD, none of us can handle this. So, you know, the thing is that we have to be extremely healthy. We have to have worked through these issues, specifically for narcissistic abuse, before we can even enter the realm of someone like this. And even so, speaking for myself, I stay away from these because they are brilliant. And as much as I know, I am no match for these people. I may recognize it somewhere down the line. I may recognize it at the beginning. But I cannot be around these people because their mind doesn't think like mine does. And so when I wouldn't even suggest, if you know somebody has NPD, that you stay in any sort of relationship with them. Now, if it's a family, it's a different situation. But, you know, there are levels of contact that you can have with a family, and you can certainly control that. But I guess what I'm talking about here is a romantic relationship. So if you find yourself in a romantic relationship or in a dating relationship with someone like this, get out of it. So, let's see. Okay, so the letter writer says, I understand that life is fair progress and that the narcissist misses out on these spiritual growth opportunities, but how do you deal with being alone and single while these people enjoy their lives? Okay, so there's a lot I have to say about that, but the number one thing is if you do not work out these problems from beginning to end and heal them, you are never going to feel okay within yourself. You are going to feel lonely. Even in relationships, even in the outside world, you are going to feel lonely because you have got to deal with the core issues that are there, and you cannot do this alone because this is so traumatic that it affects you on a subconscious level. It affects you traumatically for the rest of your life. It changes who you are. It changes how you think. So that's the first thing I have to say. Being alone and single, a lot of the time what happens is we focus far too much on ourselves. And it is this negative self-talk that keeps us in this loop of confusion and sadness. We say things to ourselves like, look how alone I am. Look what a loser I am. Why can't I fit into society? Why can't I do this? Why am I so weighed down with all that has happened to me? Why does the narcissist get to ruin my life and go on with his or her life? So these are self-talk things that are negative self-talk. They are not things that are going to change the way you think. And healing from this is all about changing the way you think. Because there are grooves that have been burned into your brain from old way of thinking, from brainwashing, from psychological warfare, from all the tactics that have been used to you to manipulate you and change your mind, change the way your mind functions. The only way to change these kind of things is to create new grooves in the brain. This is called neuroplasticity. It is something that scientists have discovered recently, that our brain is very flexible and that the way it has formed doesn't have to be the way it stays. We can change these neuropathways. We can rethink things so that we're not the victim of our thoughts. But in order to do that, we have to be very conscious of what we're saying to ourselves. And we have to say different things. It all boils down to self-love. I know you hear me talk about self-love, but it is so important. Because when you say things like, why am I so lonely? Why am I, you know, left this way and he gets to go on? These are not loving statements. These are abusive statements. So what you're doing is you're just carrying on what you've been told. So how can you possibly get the narcissist out of your head when you indulge in these conversations, allow them to take over your thinking process? You have to change them. You have to stop. When you begin these thoughts, you have to say cancel, cancel, or lie, stop lying to me, or however you can do this to stop it and start something else. And say to yourself, I will not abuse myself. Yes, I've been abused. Clearly I've been abused. And clearly I am still being abused. But I'm not going to be the one to do it to me. And you have to stop it. Easier said than done, I agree. And it is a process that takes little teeny steps. Starting out in the morning, promising yourself you're going to be a little bit better to yourself today than you were yesterday. Indulging yourself in things you enjoy. So this is how we stop this sad feeling of being lonely. Now, when you are healing from narcissistic abuse, it is a very lonely existence. But it has to be. So if you're not really healing, if you're not doing what's necessary to heal, and that means having somebody help you through this, the loneliness is going to go on and on and on and on. And there's only so much you can say to yourself if you're just going to be lonely. So the work, and I don't like to use the word work because we've all done too much work, but it's really within your own capabilities to make these changes in your mind. When you do that, and when you get support for the negative influence that's going around and around in your brain that is not helping you, it is not relevant to who you are today or to what you're trying to achieve in your life. When you can stop that, and that needs support, because you have to remember, this is programmed into you. And if left to your own thoughts, you will revert back to this programming. So you need someone on a weekly basis to tell you, to bring you up to speed, to tell you what reality is, to tell you how important it is to not talk to yourself this way, to remind you that these are not messages of your own thoughts. These are messages implanted in you by a sick person with a sick agenda. Okay? So that's that speaks to that. Now, as far as dealing with romantic relationships, so narcissists function in our brain like drugs do. They work to release a flood of endorphins. I'm talking about in romantic relationships. I'm not talking about childhood. I'm talking about specifically if you're lonely and you're looking for romantic relationships. They work in a way that releases floods of endorphins in your brain. And endorphins trigger positive feelings in your brain, in your body. They also reduce the perception of pain. So when you meet a narcissist, their goal is to move fast, furiously, and intensively to get your head, to get you confused, to put you in a mindset where you can't even think because you're so high on this person. So in order to not have that happen, you'll have to change the way you approach romantic relationships. And this is what I recommend. Romantic relationships must start slow. I don't care who the person is, who they represent themselves to be. They must start slow, and friendships must be built. There cannot be a physical relationship. I know how lonely you are and how much you want that. But narcissists set traps for people who are lonely and want love. And if you know that you're one of those people, you have to be super careful. So no physical relationship. That means not spending time at your place or the other person's place. Not having these, I'm going to cook dinner for you, come on over kind of things. No, you can't do that. You have to meet in neutral places. And this has to go on for a while. You should have dates that are outside or out doing things, not home, where you're vulnerable to these, you know, emotional takeovers, you know, where you cannot resist the physical relationship. So dates should be outside of your home and the other person's home. The other thing is, do not reveal yourself. Because if you think about every relationship that you've started with a narcissist, it began with you revealing your thoughts, your deepest, darkest desires, everything you haven't had, everything you've wanted, everything you look forward to. This is what they do in this initial stage. They get you to tell them these things. And they get you to tell them these things because then they know exactly where your buttons are, and they can abuse you. They customize the abuse towards you. So you do not want to reveal yourself to people too fast. As the narcissistically abused, our tendency is to vomit information all over people. We talk way too much. I don't know if we do it because we're nervous, we're uncomfortable, whatever it is, but we over-talk. What we want to do is learn not to do that. To learn to be succinct in what we say, not to reveal who we are. Ask the other person. Spend more time getting to know that other person, and don't believe anything you're told unless there's proof. So generally, a lot of times they will not want you to meet their family. They may either say their family is dead, their parents are dead, they live in another state, they don't have a good relationship. You need evidence of this. Do not believe anything. Do not believe sob stories. Only evidence. People who are on the up and up will not have a problem sharing these things with you. Only people who are deceptive will have a problem with that. And there you go. So, proof. You must have proof. I found this site by Dr. Sophie Henshaw, H-E-N-S-H-A-W, called freespiritedme.com. And on this site, and this speaks to working with narcissists, on this site you can download a free copy of something called 7 Red Flags Your Work Stress Isn't Your Fault. You may be working for a closet narcissist, okay? So go to freespiritedme.com and download this booklet. It's free. She has a lot of good information to say about working with narcissists, what to recognize, how to deal with it. Because actually all in my book as well, in Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, there's a whole chapter, or probably two, dedicated to workplace narcissism, how to deal with it, how to recognize it. However, if you are working in a place where you know there are pathological personalities, it's going to be very difficult for you not to become enmeshed. So what you have to do is, I actually started printing out this some stuff. I was looking up ways to keep ourselves protected from, you know, if we're empathic and we pick up energy. So the first thing that I read was it's really important to get ourselves grounded. So as highly sensitive people, we have a hard time staying grounded because everything is intense for us. But if we don't ground ourselves on a daily basis, we will not be able to deal with the things that intrude on our energy. So one of the things is to visualize roots growing out of the bottom of your feet and see these roots reaching deeply into the ground. Do this until you feel that your feet are weighed down. Okay. Another one is run cool water on your wrists, or bring your wrists together, one on top of the other, with the hands going in opposite directions, and do this for 5 minutes. You can do meditations, exhalations, inhalations. I've often been told to go outside in bare feet, walk on the ground, because if you live near the beach, get on the sand, because nature can cleanse us. So then another thing that I found on this site, and I'm so sorry, I don't remember where it was, but I was taking notes as I was going, clearing. So after you've absorbed unwanted energy, you can actually wipe away this energy that you've taken in to your surrounding body. And what they say is to cup your hands and start above your head. Using both hands, cut through the energy in a quick swiping action, pushing it away. Imagine your hands clearing your head area, then moving down to your neck, your chest, abdomen, and so on, and continue all the way down to the feet. And when you're finished, picture yourself in a white bubble. This way, this is protected space, and no one can enter it. Let's see. Okay. Dr. Orloff has a article called How to Stop Absorbing the Energy of Others. Look this up. I think it's Dr. Judy Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F. Look up the article, How to Stop Absorbing the Energies of Others. And she talks about how to make a shield of light around your entire body that allows you to block out negative and lets positive enter in. So I hope I answered these questions. There was a lot of things to touch on. So this is pretty much, if you have any questions and you're listening to the show, please do call in and ask me. But you can always write to me if you have any questions about what I said today, and write them to loveyourlife@randygfine.com. But so much of what I said, with the exception of the links that I've given you and the sites that I've shared with you, is in my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, if you have it. You know, some people say, well, I'm working through the book. Well, it's great, but if you have specific issues, the book is designed so you can go to specific chapters and work on what you need. Yes, to read the book in totality is going to help you in general, but if you are having some specific issue, look for the chapter, because I believe I've covered just about everything that can relate to narcissistic personality disorder abuse issues, from recognizing it, dealing with it, and healing from it. So we do have a caller, and I recognize this number. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I really am just taking in what you're just saying from the letter you shared, and I especially liked when you said none of us can handle this. Stay away from these people. We're no match for them. And you're absolutely right. And anyway, what I'd like to share this time is, as I've told you before, I'm a parent of a son who is married to a narcissist. And I've been on the receiving end of this, and I've been on the receiving end of a smear campaign, which I still, still, nothing's been resolved on that part of it, so all I can do is wait it out. But anyway, he visited me. We met in Spain just this last week to attend a wedding, and he just finished his graduate degree and is about ready to take a job on the West Coast, and his wife won't join him until later, but we did have a few little issues, and I think I'm hoping that that he will eventually see the reality of this situation. So what happened was he had to buy a suit for this wedding, and he only had so much money, and apparently she controls the finances and making sure that she's dependent on him. And we found one that was, well, of course, at the last minute, you're not going to get a very good price, but he said he was concerned about how much it cost. I said, well, I think maybe you need to call your wife and have her put money in your account. I mean, I knew this was not going to happen, but what I wanted him to start, and I did not offer to bail him out on this, because I want him to see for himself, start seeing for himself the reality of this. And then we had another situation where we were late meeting, and he started getting abusive towards me and projecting on me. But I think that's how they get sometimes when they're involved in these relationships. They start acting like them sometimes. Okay, now then he had to change flights. He missed his connecting flight because he could not find the terminal. Because the wedding celebration, he was not really thinking clearly, but he had to bail himself out of this. And I feel like that by not bailing him out, it's moving him one step closer to seeing the reality of this. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh, yes. That was very, very good thinking on your part. You are right. Because no one recognizes narcissistic abuse until they feel the pain of it. And when we rescue them, we enable them and keep them from bottoming out. It's just like any other, really, sort of like an addiction. You know, we hear about if we enable an addict, they won't bottom out. Well, it's the same thing with a narcissist. If we save them, they won't feel the pain. And nobody recovers from this unless they feel it themselves. You can't tell somebody that you are being abused.
No, you sure can't. No.
No. So I absolutely
out,
agree with what you.
Not
yeah.
To.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you.
He would not. He would not call his wife, and so because he doesn't know what I know about this, and she controls the finances to make sure he has practically nothing, so she stays dependent on him. He's got to take a job, and I don't know. He was having difficulty working out the deposits, so I didn't say anything. But she's gonna try to probably take everything he earns. So he stays under control. So he's a control buyer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully the separation, you know, the temporary separation will be enough for him to wake up. But knowing how manipulative and smart these people are, these narcissists are, she will find a way to manipulate him from afar, because I have people living in other countries that are still being manipulated by a parent that lives in this country. So I hear that all the time. Not one person, but it doesn't matter where you are, they are able to manipulate you if you don't know what you're dealing with. So,
and I saw he was there. He was in a lot of pain. He was really upset, but I let him. But I had to let him get upset again. Hopefully it's one step closer.
I agree with you. And I know that's hard. So many parents will say to me, when they realize that they've been married to a narcissist, now they've left the narcissist, and now the children are having issues, whether they be young or adult children. They'll say to me, how do I help my children? And as parents, yes, that is our first inclination, is to help our children. We don't want our children to be in pain. But we have to help ourselves first, which you obviously have done. And I know because we've worked together a little bit on this. But the children, unfortunately, we have to let them see. Because if you tell them that that their parent or something or their spouse or their somebody they're dating has this personality disorder, they will reject you. So you have to handle this with gloves, and I know you have learned this. So
I'm proud
of you for the way you did that. And I know you probably could have easily dipped into your pocket and helped him out.
And believe it or not, he was upset for a while, but thank goodness he got over it quickly. And I was a little concerned, well, there might be this 3 months he won't speak to me. It didn't happen within a couple of days. So I feel like I've made some progress. I've made a lot of progress in that way. Stood my ground, set my own boundary.
Yeah. The fact that he wants to spend time with you is enormous. It's huge. Generally, they will, you know, children going through these kind of things will alienate the parent because they don't want to hear it, and also because the parent has been badmouthed by their partner so much that they begin to believe it. And just like an enabling spouse, when they stay in these relationships, it's generally because there's something they are getting from this relationship, something they need, and they're sort of willing to relinquish their power for some reason. I don't know why. Of course, there could be many reasons.
I think it's like you said, it's like addiction. It's an addiction. Mm-hmm. They'll do anything they need to do to get that fixed.
Exactly. So, yeah, and also, you know, sometimes there's other things that person offers them that they're willing to sell their souls out for. And it's not just your son. I mean, this happens to hundreds of thousands of people, that very intelligent people, very accomplished people, who end up selling their souls out to these people. Hopefully one day he will just snap out of it and wake up. How old is your son?
He's 27.
Okay. He's still pretty young.
Yes, he just got his PhD.
That is so amazing. Congratulations on that. Oh, that's wonderful. So he's a smart guy.
He starts a new job, and I'm just hoping that being around different people for this time, they're going to be separated for about 4 months because she can't leave her internship till the end of the summer. So I'm hoping that by meeting other people that he'll start seeing this.
Can you make another trip to visit him during that time?
Oh, yeah. I will
be
visiting him in July. Yes, I'm flying out there.
Good.
Absolutely.
That'll be great reinforcement. Absolutely.
And now my other thing I wanted to ask you, too, one of the terms that's used in narcissistic personality disorder is the term grandiosity, and that seems to be used frequently. And I think that can be a little bit confusing because when I first read that, I thought, gee, it's these people imagine themselves as famous people, rich and famous, but it's not so. And
well, that's
one
actually
authors,
one aspect. Yeah, I'm going to pull out my book here so I can just take a look. Let me see. Not my book, but I have a binder that I keep with all kinds of interesting information. So let me see what diagnosis requirements. Okay.
And I think it should be synonymous with the word contempt. That's what I read. And those two words are synonymous. I thought, that's another way to look at it. It's probably a little more, it probably clarifies this better.
Okay. So when they speak of a narcissist being grandiose, it means that they expect to be seen as superior to everyone else. So there is this arrogance. And this is why we see them as the star and hero of everything they do. Nothing else exists except their perspective and experiences. This is what they mean when they talk about the grandiosity. It's a sense of self-importance that is so full-blown. They're the celebrity in every situation. So that is what is talked about when, you know, they say it. And it's actually the first diagnosis of someone that has this disorder. There's 9 of them. And
yeah,
you're required to have 5.
It seems to me that was kind of a little bit of a vague term, but maybe I should add another one, because I think one of the other authors I read, I forgot her name, the word contempt should probably be added to it, or that is synonymous with grandiosity.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think that, let's see, interpersonally exploitive, lacks empathy, envious. You're right.
Contempt
is absolutely one. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
And my daughter-in-law was just like that all the time, from the time I had to interact with her over a year ago during that nightmarish week. After about the first hour, she just started right in. It just never stopped. It's like you say, you can't win. You're no match for these people.
No.
At all.
No. Yeah, you know, as I'm thinking about this, you know, as you brought this up, you know, I'm thinking that when they talk about a narcissist as being grandiose, they're talking about it in terms of a diagnosis. And contempt would not be necessarily a diagnosis, but it would not be kind of a something that would appear in front of someone analyzing them, a therapist or something like that. So I guess they talk about a grandiose sense of self-importance. So we could actually say a contemptful sense of self-importance would be probably more accurate.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's really used in terms of a diagnosis. So good point, though. I love being challenged on these things because it only makes me learn more, and the more I learn, the more I can help people. So thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting concept there, because this grandiosity, because I was a little for quite a while, I was really a little bit confused about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it makes a lot more sense now. And
okay.
Well, my daughter-in-law, she comes across with this grandiosity, but she really she isn't she is not what she says she is.
Right.
At all.
Right.
They think they are.
Right.
But they're not.
It's a false self. So it can't be. You know.
Fake.
It's something. It's very artificial. Fair. It's, you know, and that's so hard for us because. Some people really just cannot believe that they're looking at a human being, but the person's brain doesn't function like ours. We want to think that if they look like us, they think like us, but it is not so. They are they're survivalists. That's why I call them parasites. So
parasites,
because you know they're parasites and predators, but they're survivalists, just like. Any animal in the kingdom, the animal kingdom, has to hunt for their food. They have to hunt for narcissistic supply. They have to make sure they have it. It is what drives their life. It is so basic. And everything that we see that they do all around this is just to secure supply, and they have so many ways of doing it.
And
but
you know what my son still does not see is that I have not heard her say one kind word to him. Never.
Yeah.
So
well, she probably did. She probably did in the love bombing stage.
Oh yeah,
There was something that hooked him, you know. And that stage, the honeymoon stage, is that's what I was talking about, where the endorphins are released, and then when that person changes and now they become abusive, all you want to do is get that high back. So you're doing anything you can to try to please this person, thinking there's one, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do that, that person will change and then I'll have them back. But that person never existed. But we get, you know, I have so many people that come to me and they're like, I was in this relationship, I know this person is horrible for me, but I'm addicted. I can't stop it. And if they walk in the door today, I would hug and kiss them because I can't get over the addiction. And that's what this is based on. It's based on this stage where the endorphins are released and we have a high that we want to get back. So it's just about abstinence and willpower, these kind of things. This is how we get over these things. But it's not easy. None of this is easy.
It's kind of like losing weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because food often is a comfort thing for people. And sometimes food can release endorphins. It's the same kind of thing, you know. We go do it for comfort and, you know, and it's a friend and it's companionship and everything like that. How many years has your son been in this relationship?
Okay, he started, he was his sophomore year in college.
Okay.
And
right.
almost 9 years.
Okay, long time. Okay.
But see, there's more to it than that because if he became enmeshed with a family. It was a family that drew him in. It wasn't just her. It was this extended family that they were all part of this love bombing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They're like a cult.
We're going to run out of time. So
sure. Yeah.
I want to thank you for calling in and sharing some interesting things that you said and very thought provoking. So always good for me to listen to and try to figure out and for other people to hear. So thank you. I have to close the show.
Okay, well, thank you. It's always a pleasure. I always learn new things too. So we'll talk again then next month.
Yes, absolutely. So the next show is going to be on May 11th, Friday, May 11th.
Okay.
And the call-in number again will be 424-220-1801. If you're listening to the show after the recording, try to make it, you know, try to listen to the show at least. And if something provokes you, something stimulates you, call in and share because the things that you have to say help other people. We all have things to contribute. You just as much. I don't have to be the only one doing the talking. So to my listeners, thank you so much for listening in. I do hope to hear from you, at least for one of these shows. It'll be the last second Friday, I'm sorry, of every month. So I will talk to you all then. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.